All material things are an analogy for the understanding of godliness. In truth, of course, everything is godliness, and godliness is everything. But in order to make this comprehensible, the Almighty created a physical world comprising many components, each of which is an analogy for the understanding of godliness. Imagine a huge cauldron which is filled with hundreds of buckets of water. Since water is by nature cold, and it is difficult to warm such a quantity all at once, one first heats 1 gallon of water to the highest degree that its container can stand without bursting. Having been heated over its own fire, the vessel with its boiling water is now placed in the huge cauldron, whose hundreds of buckets of water are gradually warmed. Water is Torah. Lithuania is, Baruch Hashem, a huge cauldron full of Torah scholars. May they continue to increase. In addition to news gleaned from letters and conversations with people who come from there, I have happy memories of the times when I was guests of our folk in Lithuania. From my meetings with various rabbis and Torah scholars who are not of our circles, as well as from questions of all kind which reach me from quite ordinary householders, the same impression is gained of Lithuania's Jewry's love of Torah. In fact, when I was in Riga, I told the people there that in addition to their commendable attainments in the field of tzedakah and mutual help, they should learn this attribute, the love of Torah, from the Lithuanians. Lithuania takes pride in a Torah scholar. With them, a yeshiva student occupies his rightful place. There, adult scholars are immersed in their studies and exert themselves to advance their scholastic attainment. But the nature of water is cold, and it's cold there, freezing cold. Though it is not in the nature of water to stagnate, this is nevertheless possible. If, however, water bubbles and flows, then it does not stagnate. And what keeps water in motion is heat. In brief, the cauldron needs to be warmed up. Each student of the Taim Chitamimim Yeshiva, each chassid worthy of the name, is such a vessel, a gallon of boiling water with the capacity of being heated from within. The Tamimim who are in Lithuania should be happy that they are living in an atmosphere of the love of Torah, for the yeshivas there are its life-giving waters. At the same time, they, together with other Hasidim who live in the towns of Lithuania, ought to strengthen the establishment of regular study sessions for the study of Hasidus. At this point, the Rebbe addressed a remark to a Tamim by the name of Yeshua Isaac, who had come for Yom Tov from Kovne. Your letter on the organization of the study of Hasidus among the Tamimim and Anash in various Lithuanian towns caused me considerable pleasure. A child is a continuation of his father. My pleasure is my father's pleasure, and my father's pleasure is a source of spiritual life and blessing to all those who occupy themselves with Torah and Aveda. Please convey our greetings to all the Tamimim and Anash in Lithuania, and see to it that you consolidate the regular sessions for the public study of Chassidus. And may the Almighty help you all materially and spiritually. Someone asked a question. It would appear from the analogy that not only is it impossible for a person to occupy himself with another spiritual welfare until he himself has attained the level expected of him, but moreover, the cold water could prevail over the hot. To this, the Rebbe replied, though it is true that the nature and details of all material things should serve as analogies for the understanding of spiritual matters, one should nevertheless keep in mind that an analogy is only an analogy. Even though this fact is obvious, the very awareness of it serves to free an analogy of unwanted limitations and corporalization. So it is in our analogy of the cauldron of cold water, where the analogy is not absolutely comparable to the subject being illustrated. In the analogy, one cannot in fact put the hot water into the cold water without its being cooled unless one first boils it properly. This is so because whatever is material has no real existence, and its heat is not of its essence. It can therefore cool down. In the case of a spiritual value, however, through its very encounter with something cold, which it seeks to warm, its quintessential inner strength is aroused. We are not speaking here of the arousing of this inner strength through its determination to vanquish an opposing power. Here the arousal is affected by its purposeful activity alone. One can find a way of using every material thing for the understanding of a spiritual subject. It goes without saying that the analogy will not match the subject in all its details, and one needs to exercise discernment as to what to select and what to ignore. This is what is meant by the common abbreviation Vidal, Vidai Lemavin, for a mere remark suffices to light the way for a man of understanding. The way it is now conducted, your Yagdal Torah school in Kovna lays a firm foundation in the fear of heaven. May the Almighty bestow an abundance of material and spiritual blessings on all those who are involved in it and who support it, and give them the desire to strengthen and enlarge it, so that it will increase its enrollment of the students who are able and conscientious in their study of the Torah and in the fear of heaven. And from the Yagdal Torah, literally an increase in Torah, may there come an increase in God-fearers. There are certain words in the Tanakh, in the written law, which have two forms: the kri, the way the word is to be pronounced, and the ksiv, the way the word is spelled. In the oral law, the sages sometimes interpret the content of a word by means of the instruction al tikri. Do not read as follows, but read it as follows. As in the phrase al tikri banoyich ele banoyich. Do not read the word banayich, your children, rather but banoyich, your builders. In Chassidus, the instruction al tikri is the inner life of a word. It brings the word to life, both on the intellectual plane of Askala and on the plane of Aveda. On Simchas Torah last year, one of the functionaries of the Taimche Tamimim Yeshiva was given the honor of reading aloud the verse V'yiyuna Marinu L'ratzein Lifnei Adoin Koel, may our words find favor before the Master of all things. It was explained at that time that the word Amarenu can be interpreted in the manner of kri and kesiv, as if to say, al tikre, do not read our words, but read our deeds and our labor. So the verse would say, may our deeds find favor. One cannot support a yeshiva with words alone. One has to take action. As far as the yeshiva is concerned, whether materially or spiritually, through speech, through thought and speech alone, cannot be counted as action. We once explained the statement of the sages, Machshava Teva Kadosh Baruch Hu Metzarfa L'Maisa. The Almighty joins a good thought to a deed, or reckons a good thought as a deed. This is for the Almighty to do. As far as people are concerned, the deed has to be actually done. One of the people at the Farbrengen of this talk asked a question. The verse in Yeshayahu says, Af asisiv, and moreover I have made it, implying that in translating an intention into action, maisa, one is confronted by spiritual obstacles which obscure the way. As far as one's avodah with oneself is concerned, Chassidus offers advice, but when it comes to influencing another, how does one cope with these obstructions? The Friedrich Rebbe replied as follows. In Chassidus, there is sound advice on all matters of conduct and guidance, both with regard to one's own conduct and with regard to the conduct and guidance of another. Tanya is called Likutei Amarim, selected sayings, because it is entirely composed of answers given to questions asked at Yechidus. It is the source of the spring of living waters that purifies. The relationship between Rav and Talmud, teacher and student, is more than simply a relationship of Mashpia and Mekabel, mentor and recipient, in other words, disciple. The task of the Rav should be to make of his student a recipient, to extend the bounds of his sensitivity and of his abilities. This demands a certain dedication on the part of the Mashpia towards his Mekabel. It requires great effort and constant prayer that it be granted him to raise God-fearing disciples. And then the Almighty helps one to find the real ways and means of turning one's students into a true recipient. A chassid must be well ordered. Because time is short, we will have to be brief, and the expression of brevity is always somewhat pungent. Note, this talk was delivered at the Kiddush of Simchas Torah, and those present had to hurry in order to allow time for the Mincha prayer and the Yom Tov meal before sunset. Generally speaking, concepts are by preference explained at length, with ample details and instances, and each additional positive or negative illustration enhances their comprehension. But just as every concept must have a beginning and source, so must it have an end. The beginning of a concept is a point. The end of a concept is brevity. Even though the point precedes the concept and brevity comes at the end of the concept, and moreover, the two extremes are by definition different from each other, yet this they have in common, that each, when expressed, gives rise to a certain degree of pungency. To revert to our subject, a chassid without order loses the very semblance of a chassid. Without order, not only will he be constantly losing his way and not arriving at any destination, but even what he does do will not be properly done. It will be dead without vitality. A chassid should carefully observe elder chassidim in order to learn from their conduct, but should first measure himself well to determine whether he is already at a level at which it is proper for him to emulate a particular practice. Suppose someone observes another who is in a state of spiritual awakening in the course of his prayers, and is himself aroused at the sight, but he is not yet really at that level. One must not cool anyone down, but at the same time, a person should know that this particular Aveda is not yet appropriate for him. For the moment, the observation should be pocketed, until such time that it becomes appropriate for him to put to use. In the meantime, a passage of Tillim with tears asks the Almighty to help in attaining the desired awakening. There is a lot of entreating to do, that one's prayers should come forth spontaneously, that one should be helped to cultivate an open and sensitive heart. My father, in other words, the Rebbe Rashab, once said to someone, quote, "Washing each hand three times before meals and holding the handle of the dipper with a towel is not a practice that is appropriate to you. When you are at that level, then you will do it," end quote. To someone else he said, quote, "As to washing each hand three times before meals and holding the vessel with a towel, you should not wait until you have attained to a certain level, but should do so out of Kabbalah's ol, because that is what the law requires. A chassid has to be well ordered both in his study and in avoda. In fact, these depend on each other. If one is orderly in his study, then he is orderly in his avoda too." The Rebbe, in other words, the Friedrich Rebbe, asked those present to say l'chaim over a drop of mashke. He added that there was no need to talk about this because talk of this kind displaced subjects that did need to be talked about. He then amplified this theme as follows. Each soul that is about to descend to this world is allotted a certain number of letters of speech which it will utter in the course of its lifetime. These letters are uncombined, for free will is a choice of combinations is left to each individual, who decides for himself which words to speak. The superiority of man over the whole of creation lies in speech, to the point that mankind at large is termed Medaber, the speaker, a name that indicates the highest level of humanity. One would have thought at first glance that the superiority of man lies in his intelligence. The distinctive quality of intelligence, however, is to be perceived when it finds expression in speech. According to the dictates of worldly wisdom, speech may be divided into four categories. According to the Torah, following the opinion of Rambam, it falls into five categories. Number one, speech which is a mitzvah, such as reading words of Torah and prayer. Number two, speech which is beloved, as in praise of the quality of intellect and good character. Number three, speech which is permitted, such as that involving a person's needs of food and livelihood. Number four, speech which is forbidden, such as falsehood, slander, and tale-mongering. And number five, speech which is repugnant, idle talk and pointless narrative. Chassidus discusses and clarifies these five categories at various levels. throwing light on their foundations, reveals the inner mystery hidden in speech, and explains how the tongue is the quill of the heart, and speech is the servant of intellect and character. With the divine light in Chassidus, we can see the clarity of the above five distinctions, the quality and nobility of speech, which is a mitzvah and which is beloved, the vulgarity of forbidden speech, and the lowliest of repugnant speech. Chassidus clarifies the meaning of permitted speech, explaining first what is meant by permissibility. According to the teachings of Chassidus, permissibility is a very closely defined concept. Before partaking of what is permissible, one is first required to establish whether it is needed. If the object is not needed, but merely desire, then Chassidus teaches that even if it is permissible of itself, the desire for it is absolute evil, requiring teshuva. Everyone needs to be vigilant with speech, that is, with the third category, permitted speech, for it commonly leads to the fifth category, the repugnant speech, of pointless prattle, which in turn leads to the fourth category, forbidden speech. A special care needs to be taken by business people, for the superfluous talk of commerce is a well-trodden threshold leading to all kinds of evil. By superfluous talk is meant that every delectable detail of a subject is repeated over and over again with gusto, and this kind of talk can lead to evil consequences. The Mittler Rebbe says that business people have an advantage over full-time Torah scholars, for they see the tangible workings of divine providence in practice. But the inflated talk of commerce draws cataracts over the eyes, so that not only does it blind the person from perceiving the workings of divine providence, but moreover, it removes his delight in spiritual things, making him coarsened by materiality. People in the business world, then, should vigilantly shun this kind of talk. Whether he is standing in his shop or in the marketplace, every businessman should have a book in his pocket, such as a Chumash, Tanya, Mishnayos, or Tehillim, so that whenever he has a free moment, he can read a verse of Chumash, or a few lines of Tanya, or a Mishnah, or a passage of Tehillim. The words directed above to business folk are not addressed only by one who guides and warns a certain part of our people. May they all enjoy good health. As one who loves all of Israel, I offer these words as a piece of good advice. If people act on it, the Almighty will grant His help, and an abundance of blessings will flow in through their very doors and windows. This is a matter which affects not only each individual separately, but also the entire house of Israel. For a word which a Jew utters in Torah, prayer, supplication, or request opens up all the pipelines of divine blessings, silencing charges leveled in the heavenly court, rescinds harsh edicts, and blesses one's endeavors with success. Let me tell you a story. The Baal Shem Tov once saw that the entire house of Israel stood under a dire threat which was being weighed in the heavenly court. He consulted with his saintly disciples, but despite their many fasts, they were unable to revoke the impending decree. They managed to persuade the local Rav to ordain a public fast, not because he understood the inner meanings of what was at hand, but on the pretext of certain overt circumstances. At a certain point in the course of the fast, when all the men and women of the community had assembled for the reading of Tehillim, the Baal Shem Tov saw that the decree of the heavenly court still stood intact. Soon after, he turned joyfully to Rab Nachman of Haradanke, and with a radiant face told him that the sentence had been revoked. The joy of his disciples was unbounded. When they next sat at his table, the Baal Shem Tov told them that one woman had caused the edict to be rescinded. In the midst of all the Tehillim and the wailing in the synagogue, the arguments of the accusing angels had risen to a pitch. It was an hour of woe for Israel. But in the woman's gallery of that synagogue, there sat one simple peasant woman who was so ignorant that she could not even read Tehillim. When she heard the sobbing and weeping all around her, she cried out, "Ribbono shel Olam, aren't you our father? Your children are asking something of you with bitter tears. I've got five little ones at home, and when they all start crying, I can't bear to hear them. So you on high, who have so many children, even if you had the heart of a Tartar, you'd have to answer them. Father, answer your children." a story should be not only heard, but rather sensed. In Yiddish, nit nar hedin nar take der hedin. In fact, at any time one ought to have udnin neshamin, ears that hear, and hearing is worthy of the name only when it leads to sensitive perception. This story tells us how potent is a word uttered by a Jew, how cherished is the reading of a passage of Tehillim. Though we live in the remotest corners of the world, yet with a word of Torah or Tehillim, he can open up the pipelines of livelihood for the entire house of Israel. However, he who is intellectually able to comprehend the unity of God, both how everything is godliness and how godliness is everything, cannot discharge his responsibility by Tehillim alone. If he seeks to do so, this is no less than casting off the yoke of heaven.